Hello and welcome to the Investors Chronicle Companies and Market Show. I am John Heumann, editor of the Investors Chronicle, joined today by Harriet Russell. How are you doing, Harriet?
Yeah, good, thanks, John.
Excellent. And we're going to talk supermarkets.
We are.
And Megan Boxall, how are you, Megan?
I'm very well, thank you.
And we're going to talk biotech, which on the face of it have nothing in common. Absolutely nothing. But they do, according to my editorial, which is that both of them have required a little bit of a leap of faith from investors recently. Biotech always requiring a leap of faith because drug development is a risky business. But in the grocery sector, we have Ocado, which is the best performing show of the year and which has just gone nuts.
Well, yeah, I mean, grocery in itself is becoming more and more intertwined with technology. So the valuations are starting to creep up and that's what makes it similar to the sort of blue sky scenario that you often see in biotech.
Indeed. Let's start with the news, and let's start with supermarkets, because the lead news story this week is Tesco, which is in the process of tying up this big deal with the French giant Carrefour.
Yeah, it's there's no agreement set in stone, but they revealed this week that they have actually been in negotiations for 2 years already, which predates the Booker acquisition. And they're hoping to strike what they're calling a strategic alliance, which is not dissimilar to sourcing groups that already exist within Europe. So things like AMS. But they're the two biggest retailers by market share in their respective countries. So they're hoping to come together and sort of join forces when it comes to pricing and suppliers.
I mean, they were at various points the two biggest retailers in the world, grocery retailers.
Yeah, and you can look at that several which ways, by store estate, by market share, etc., etc.
By the number of countries they operated in.
They were huge. Not so much anymore with the arrival of things like Amazon becoming a much more global company. So.
And they did retrench, of course, when they suffered some financial... Both of them suffered similar financial difficulties and decided to pull back from this massive global expansion that they were undertaking.
Yeah, and that's been one of the main motivations, according to the analysts, for this strategic alliance, is that it's a much more effective way to have sort of global, or at least in this case, continental pricing power without actually having to physically open stores or launch websites or try and launch your own local distribution, which relates to what Ocado is trying to do, and just try and take control of the supply chain from A to B by sort of, deciding that two heads are better than one.
And of course, but the Booker deal is part of that too, because Booker obviously is the supplier of many of these products to the smaller kind of corner shop type business.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways it's a great deal for Carrefour and it's a good deal for Tesco, because Carrefour, as you say, is getting that power from Booker, and it really doesn't surprise me that now Tesco is able to strike these deals with other companies within Europe, and we might see them further afield as well because it has Booker in its arsenal.
Did the shares react to this deal?
Yeah, they did. They were positive. We actually tipped Tesco a few weeks ago because even though the shares are actually at a 12-month high, suddenly...
Coming from a very low base,
and because they're riding a real upgrade wave at the moment, it means that the PE ratio actually looks the best it has in terms of value for probably about 2.5 years. So relative to that sort of recent history, you're actually getting quite a bargain for a company that we think still has much further to run and actually looks really well placed to achieve the targets that it laid out 2 years ago around operating margin.
I mean, there's an interesting thing you mentioned in the news piece, which is that these kind of massive cross-country sourcing agreements aren't actually new.
No.
And Morrison is in fact involved in one.
Yeah, this was something that I actually wasn't necessarily too aware of until this week, and we started digging around for some stuff. It's not new, and the analysts are saying, you know, don't take this deal as sort of groundbreaking in the way that the Booker deal was, because as you say, these big conglomerate sort of sourcing groups, they sort of act a bit like unions in a way, which is to make sure that suppliers and retailers are working in a sort of equilibrium and that everyone's getting the fairest price.
Is this because, I mean, are these kind of deals important to consumers? Because, I mean, when we talk about a lot of the consumer goods that are sold through supermarkets, we are talking about goods sold from big multinational FMCG food companies like Unilever, Reckitt Benckiser, Procter & Gamble. Is it a rebalancing of those relationships?
Yeah, I think so, because you have also a lot of external factors which often affect pricing. So things like the sterling slump, which we saw in the wake of the referendum a couple of years ago. That's when we had Marmite Gate with Unilever and Tesco, with Unilever really trying to push through price rises that Tesco just put their foot down and said, we're not going to do that. And you also have general sort of economic factors like inflation or deflation, which can really hurt or help supermarkets.
Okay, that's quite interesting. So basically, these cross-border sourcing agreements, I mean, do they kind of flatten out some of those fluctuations
then? Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. I think it helps to neutralise the field somewhat and just make sure that everyone's getting the best price. And when you say, is it good for consumers, I actually think it's just a bit of a win-win situation, actually, because the supermarket will get a price they can afford, the supplier will get a price which still makes them a profit, and hopefully all of that translates into the best value for money price for consumers.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite interesting, though. I mean, you talk about supply win-win, because Bearball has not taken that view entirely. I mean, he talks about, I mean, obviously this deal is a few months down the road before we see the concrete details. But he talks about the hard work is to be agreed within the next 2 months, implying the hard work of defining the details, screwing the suppliers, I think is what he actually says. Are the suppliers going to get screwed here?
Yeah, there is always the risk of that. I think it's a good risk to highlight. That being said, I think we're in a much more sort of transparent and vocal world than we've ever been in when it comes to this sort of thing. So if that turned out to be the case, then I suppose suppliers have publicity on their side in order to sort of highlight that. What they don't have on their side, of course, is that between them, Carrefour and Tesco are going to be their biggest clients. So in terms of saying, well, we don't need you, they're not going to be able to do that. So you would hope that there would be someone like the AMS existing in a separate entity saying, come on guys, that's not right.
So cheaper Ben and Jerry's, not necessarily good for Unilever. I mean, these FMCG companies, which have been viewed as, say, bond proxies, very stable, very you know, kind of steady growth, good dividends coming out of them, good cash flow. Are they overvalued now in the light of this deal? One for Julia, perhaps.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, it totally really depends on what category of FCMG we're really talking about, because something like tobacco, for example, is in a completely different state to someone like Tesco. And even within supermarkets, there are a range of valuations on offer. Morrisons is extremely expensive, Sainsbury's is extremely cheap, Ocado, as we'll talk about in a minute, you can't even unpack that value.
But this is all in terms of where they are in their kind of recovery cycle.
Exactly.
Or in terms of Ocado, how we're actually looking at that stock, and we'll come on to that.
It just comes down to that old chestnut of, if you're an investor, you have to understand the individual company story. And as much as there are sectoral trends and themes that we highlight in the magazine, it still comes down to sort of balancing that against what's gone on with the company. You know, Tesco, I've just said, the valuation there is actually very cheap relative to the last 24 months, but if you've been a Tesco shareholder for 5 years, then you might not see this as particularly attractive.
Yeah, I mean, indeed. And actually, I did look at some share prices before we came out. Tesco, since 2010, is down. You've lost money.
Yeah.
Not true of all supermarket groups. One I looked at was a company called Royal Ahold. I've never worked out how to pronounce that. It's a Dutch supermarket with big presence in the US. And actually, their shares have continued to rise. So it kind of suggests that actually the problems that some of the supermarkets have had have been self-inflicted, that well-run supermarkets have continued to do well in this down period.
I mean, one of the biggest things that I think Tesco has going for it, and it's not something that I usually heap a huge amount of importance onto, is its management.
Yeah, I would agree.
You know, Charles Wilson is now on that board. He's made some pretty important decisions already, including Tesco Direct, which I highlight in the tip that we did 2 weeks ago. And now this decision, I can't believe that is not his influence. And Dave Lewis is not going to be pushed around. He's shown us that with Unilever. So, and even bringing the business back to somewhat of a recovery since 2014. So I think between them, you've probably got two of the best guys in the sector running that business now.
No, I do think he's an astounding executive, and and I think for Tesco, you can see how this is working out.
When Booker was its own listed entity, around results, around anything actually, he would call me directly. So you don't get that a lot from FTSE 100 or even 250 companies. So I hope that still continues to a degree, and that he's quite upfront. And that's why I say, you know, the supplier risk issue is not to be ignored, but I also don't think it should be overdone either.
Indeed, I concur entirely. I remembered the same of Charles Wilson. I can see you're getting bored there, Megan. Should we talk tech? Because, I mean, before we go into biotech, let's talk tech, which is another of your sectors. Some are suggesting that this Tesco Carrefour deal is partly a response to the looming threat of Amazon. And also we have Ocado, which has been making waves recently, which I've written about this week. And which, in fact, when you were conducting your interview with James Clark from the Stock Exchange, Ocado actually came up when you were talking as an example of the kind of company that the UK market tends to undervalue because we just don't have a really good relationship with tech. And the same is true of biotech. I mean, let's talk quickly about Amazon, whether this is a response to Amazon, whether we think Ocado has actually got what it takes to prove itself as a successful global tech player, because that's what the share price suggests.
Yeah, and in the last few months, that is what the share price has suggested. But as we were saying earlier, it's potentially gone a little bit too far now.
You weren't saying that when we spoke earlier today.
I wasn't saying it before I had an actual look at the share price. And I read Peel Hunt's note from January, which had a target price of 460p. It's now well over 1,000. So I think people have got very, very excited about Ocado in a very short space of time. And where's it going to go from here? I mean,
well, it could go up because there were some analysts, and you know, there are essentially two ways of looking at Ocado, and this is why I think it's great to have a grocery specialist and a tech specialist in the same room, because this is the debate that's happening now.
It's a debate we've already been having, because we did a specialist podcast a few months ago with a tech analyst from Peel Hunt against me. We did a bull versus bear.
Did you win?
Well, a draw. It was a true draw, and I hate to say that because I hate sitting on fences. But what I would say is what you're about to say, which is that there are two ways to look at Ocado, which is from a technology point of view, it suddenly becomes a lot more palatable and a lot more believable. And from a retail point of view or a grocery point of view, it seems completely overblown.
Yeah, I mean, so Ocado floated in 2010. I was covering your sectors at the time, and I was pretty negative. The reason being that it had been around for 10 years and you know, it built some funky warehouses.
Yeah, it took 11 years to report a profit.
Well, I don't think it really did. I
mean, it was a cash profit.
Yeah, well, actually, I don't really count those as profits. I want to see pre-tax profits.
Well, yeah, earnings would be even nicer. Yeah,
but it hadn't really gained much market share. It still hasn't gained much market share. And so, grocery analysts, grocery observers were saying, "Well, it's nothing." But there was always this story in the background that, no, we're developing a platform and we're going to be able to sell this to other retailers. And that's what's happened this year.
Yeah, in defence of Ocado, it has done that this year. It built what is clearly a very impressive tech platform from which it can pick supermarket products at a faster and better rate than anyone else can. And it's doing it very well and it's signing up deals.
I still think it's mysterious, though, because they've had this tech platform for a long time. They haven't just developed it in the last year. They've improved it.
But it must have got better.
It must have got better. But then
there's been capacity for it to get better, hasn't there? Tech has come on a long way.
I guess so.
Recently.
But, you know, they were promising these deals around 2014, 2015. So actually, people, we're 3.5 years behind schedule. And I know what you're saying. These deals are of the scale and sort of brand reputation that sound very impressive on paper. But
so the first was with Morrison.
Yeah, I mean, that's years old, actually. So I don't actually count that in the recent spate of deals.
Okay, so have we had recently? Then international.
We've had Casino.
Okay.
We've had an unnamed partner last summer, still remains unnamed to this day.
Casino being a French supermarket.
Yeah.
Second to Carrefour.
Yeah, we've had one in Canada, whose name escapes me. And we've had one in Sweden as well. So it's definitely gaining pace and it's gaining sort of international scale as well. But as you make the point in your editorial, as Clive Black makes the point from Shore Capital, as I've made the point in numerous IC views, we still have no idea what the financial impact of these deals actually is.
But for tech, that often doesn't matter. And now I finally can say Amazon, because Amazon has not turned a profit. It's been around for 4 years longer than Ocado's been around, and it's still just reliant on its sales growth.
But it has massive scale.
Exactly.
What it does have, which I would argue that Ocado doesn't, is massive scale. Yeah. You can see where the lack of profits has instead gone into, yeah, cash has been generated, it's gone back into that business to make it bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. Whereas Ocado, it's kind of not that big still.
Yeah, and I'd also make the argument there as well that as soon as you're getting into comparison with Amazon territory, that is not where you want to be, because
it's too big to beat.
Yeah.
That's the problem. I mean, as much as you're saying,
You say it's too big to beat. Again, this goes back to what we were talking about, Tesco, Carrefour. Too big to beat if you're trying to build a tech platform from scratch.
Exactly.
Yeah. Not necessarily too big to defend against if you're an existing retailer with a massive, massive storage estate across Europe.
It's not too big to compete, but it's too big to beat entirely. And I think this is where the Tesco, Carrefour deal stacks up, is that they're looking at where they can really utilise or sort of leverage that scale. Okay, we can use it in the supply chain. We can use it further back. Front end, you know, distribution, delivery. I don't think they will ever be able to compete now. Amazon is so far down the line. But if you're a tech analyst sitting opposite me, you're going to say that the IP that Ocado has in its robotics or whatever is first class, and that it's just about getting other clients or other customers to believe in that proposition. But you can't compare the two. Amazon is an invaluable service in many, many countries already. Ocado isn't.
Yeah, I would concur. I mean, you know, I mean, Tesco, as far as I understand it, Sainsbury's in the UK, still use store picking models.
Yeah.
For human beings with trolleys.
And Tesco is the biggest online retailer online grocery retailer in the UK by a long way. Ocado doesn't even come close to competing with it.
So I guess the question is, okay, there's something there. It can forge deals with other supermarket retailers around the world. There is enough there for other retailers to be interested, but is there enough there to justify that share price rise we've seen this year? Or is this something to do with the recent focus that there has been on robotics and automation, and people are just getting a bit carried away?
And that is a trend at the moment. I mean, Blue Prism is the other company, and we talked about that last week. The share price growth at Blue Prism is ridiculous. And it is because there is this sudden excitement that we are going to be replacing humans with robots in the future. But it's not going to happen tomorrow. And I just think people have got a bit carried away with Ocado. Four deals in a year isn't really quite good enough.
That is a Damascene conversion since lunchtime.
she's flip reversed it.
It's true. I was very much on the other camp.
The thing is, for Ocado, four deals is actually amazing for 1 year, because we had 3.5 years of nothing. So that's why the share price is where it is. When you say, is it justified? I'm going to say, yeah, it's justified, because
to that extent.
No. Wait. It's justified insofar as there's been enough good news deal driven hype to push it to that level. I can understand, because there are shareholders who have waited years for this and they're feeling very righteous about it. But trying to unpack the valuation at the current level relative to how much we actually know about these deals in financial terms is ludicrous.
How much profit are they making today?
Minimal. I think they actually went back into the red at the last results I did.
I mean, call me old fashioned, but
yeah, I'm not investing. And this was the point that I made to James Lockyer when he came to speak to us, was if you want to invest in a blue sky story, that is on the institutions. That is not on our readers, on our retail shareholders to prop up that kind of story.
Yeah, I mean, I said sell at IPO. The share price had a little bounce, was down then for 2 years. There was a bit of a flurry, was down then for four or five years. I mean, it's been a hard slog.
Oh, yeah, and we only need one of these agreements to sort of be fleshed out for people to realise that it's probably not as good as it sounds. And the share price will derate,
but
because there's no earnings to support it.
Earlier in the US company, which is doing something extremely similar to... Was it a US company?
Yeah, but this is why I was looking at Ahold. I have no idea how to pronounce it. Well, their biggest market is the US. And they bought an online grocery company called Peapod in 2000, probably around the same time that Ocado was getting started. And Ahold bought them pretty much immediately. And instead of going down the licensing route, which Ocado said they were going to do, just said, right, we're just going to use it to just distribute our own products. And that's what they do. And they're massively, and they're much bigger, in fact, in terms of revenue. So, I mean, it's just interesting.
Ocado's got the US in its sights as well. It's looking at deals out there. It's looking at one they signed recently was more of a licensing thing where they're going to look at it state by state.
That's how US grocery retail works.
It does, but the analysts, I can't quite remember the detail off the top of my head, but the analysts at Peel Hunt were not terribly happy, because they said they would have liked, they've got sort of an exclusivity clause in there around sort of a national level as opposed to a federal level, and they've said that hasn't been sort of the ideal way to go about it. So it's a bit like gambling. We see this as well when they try and do it state by state. You've got to be so careful on the terms, because depending how you get them on that state by state basis, it sort of curtails you before you've even got started sometimes.
You've got some really fearsome unions out there as well. Yeah. I mean, that was pretty much what did for Tesco out in the
But
in
that
the US
might be the answer for Ocado, to try and get into the US and then be taken over like Peapod was by a US supermarket.
Potentially. It'll be interesting
to
see
integrated.
How their whole robotics thing goes down on a political level as well, because obviously one of Trump's biggest agendas is preserving jobs, and one of the big things about Ocado is reducing human labour. So, you know, does that take jobs away? Mm. Does it take jobs that nobody wants away? I don't know.
Improves productivity.
Though. Yeah, exactly. So it'll just be interesting to see how they can make that one sound appealing.
It is interesting. I still wouldn't buy them, but there you go. Ocado, as Marmite as ever. Anyway, I mean, it's kind of, this leads us neatly onto your cover feature. Thank you, Harriet. Leads us neatly onto the cover feature, which we were kind of talking about earlier. We're trying to say, how do we introduce this? And you were saying, yeah, perhaps it's like how companies succeed in the US, perhaps don't do so well in the UK. And we saw in your space, GW Pharma switch its listing over to the US. And this is kind of at the nub of everything we're talking about here, and why perhaps we have some reservations about Ocado. But yeah, I mean, talk us through that argument. It is interesting.
It is interesting. And as we were saying earlier, it's a massive topic to try and cover. But what GW Pharma did is a really good example of a company. It was on AIM for nearly 20 years and it ticked along nicely on AIM and then decided to do a NASDAQ listing as well. And it raised a load of money on NASDAQ. It had a very successful final phase clinical trial. The share price rocketed, and now it is only listed on NASDAQ. It's pretty much a US company. It's based in the US now. All of its sales are going to be there.
And it's medical cannabis.
It is, yeah, which, like, perfect timing. They have got the first medical cannabis product launched in the US.
Well, this has been debated a lot in Parliament recently. Yeah, we don't actually even allow medical cannabis in this country.
But it looks like we could at some point get it in the UK. It's probably going to come at some point. But they are in a really good part of the market. And there is an argument to say that they used their NASDAQ listing to get themselves there. The other part of the argument is that it could have got there without the NASDAQ listing. AIM could have provided it with that capital. But not all healthcare companies and tech companies, higher risk stocks, have been able to find the capital that they need from the UK markets, because there is a smaller pool of capital in the UK.
Are we too, going back to Ocado, are we just too impatient? You know, we expect these companies to deliver something. If it doesn't happen in 10 years, we give up, you know.
Or risk averse.
I think it's the opposite. I think we're too nervous. I think the US has a much sort of, in every way, really, a much more optimistic and positive outview on these sort of blue sky scenarios, and they're much more willing to take a punt. I think in typical British style, we're just much more reserved and a lot less willing to play the risk.
I mean, let's talk hypothetical. You know, if Ocado had started in the US and was listed on the NASDAQ, and, you know, would everyone be going, you know, would it be the world leader by now in this stuff, and everyone would be using it?
It would probably have had more support.
Yeah. Because has it had trouble raising money in the past to actually get the deals over the line?
I mean, it's done placings, which will obviously, including this year, which will have been done with institutions. So there's an argument to say that placings are not indicative of your ability to raise money, unless you're Conviviality. Won't go into that.
But they're being investigated. The audit's being investigated.
It is being investigated.
I'm sure we'll follow that up in weeks to come.
In due course, yeah. But I always think placings, as opposed to rights issues, are a lot more sort of basic when it comes to raising money, because you get your assurances beforehand. It all sort of happens in 24 hours, and they tend to be lower in value. With a rights issue, it always incurs more debate, because you're asking ordinary people with their disposable income to support these ideas, whatever they may be, and Ocado hasn't had to do that. So, but I'm inclined to agree in a hypothetical sense. If they had been in the US, I think the US would have been more supportive, because they would have viewed it immediately as a tech stock, and they would have said this company needs investment and it needs support from its shareholders if it's going to achieve these things.
And we might have to wait a bit to
much
see
more patient,
the returns.
Yeah.
Or would, you know, would we have had seen that sort of, you know, very kind of up and down share price until recently? Because actually people will be looking at, like, perhaps an Amazon, where, you know, no, the investment is going in and in and in and underpinning massive future potential.
Yeah, and it is an interesting debate. But that point about the institutions helping Ocado raise money in the UK, that's a point that James Clark was talking about a lot when I spoke to him for the feature, the healthcare feature. And he was saying how supportive institutions are of healthcare companies in the UK. And that's why it is a good market, because it is an institutions market, AIM. It's a buy and hold market. And generally, these companies are able to raise money again and again and again from the same institutional holders. And rather than it being sort of the first injection of capital, it's the continual need for capital.
So going back to GW Pharma, the money was always going to be there for them. They just chose to get it from somewhere else.
That is what James Clark argued. But there have been examples. Motive Bio was an example of another biotech company last year, which has been on AIM for a few years. It went back to the market to try and raise some money, and it couldn't. So it had to go to NASDAQ. And NASDAQ then provided it with the money that it needed to fund its final phase clinical trial. Since then, it has come back to AIM again and raised more money on AIM. But that crucial amount of money, the high risk for the final phase clinical trial, AIM investors weren't willing to provide it.
What about Hutchison China Meditech did a similar thing, didn't they? They went over to the US too.
There are a few which are dual listed,
yeah,
but GW is the one that has gone fully US.
Okay, so this week's feature is about AIM companies in the small biotech space that are, it's basically how we as private investors, so as you say, it's an institutions market, they're happy to fund these companies, but private investors understandably approach these companies with a massive degree of nervousness, mm-hmm. because it's really complicated.
It's really complicated, but in saying that, there are also lots of examples on AIM in the smaller mid-cap healthcare space, which are not high-risk stocks. They are making cash. They're really great businesses. And for, I think, a lot of private investors, they just overlook them because healthcare is risky. And if you do that, you're missing out on a huge range of really, really good quality companies just because they are in healthcare. Healthcare is, as a trend, is not a risky trend. Healthcare is growing. It needs to. We've got an aging population, a growing population. As John Barron refers to in his portfolio update this week, healthcare is a hot topic, so don't overlook it.
No, John's been a big fan of biotech for some time, and I think he's quite a sort of dipped in and out. So, I mean, you know, when the biotech market, and I think the vehicles that he has played it through have often been largely exposed through the US, have at times looked a bit expensive. He's decreased his exposure, but he's upping it again now. Mm-hmm. They look a bit cheaper. The piece that Taha has written this week in the big theme is about that trend investing as well. Healthcare is a big part of that too. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you're right, you can't ignore this. So what you've tried to do in the feature is create essentially a plan of action for anybody who wants to approach this on a stock by stock basis about how you can go about investing in individual shares in the healthcare market on AIM in a way that perhaps takes out some of the pain.
Yes, exactly. And it's a seven-step guide.
Seven steps. We always like seven steps. Yeah, nice number.
Yes, which was quite by accident. They just happened to be seven steps. But it's just looking at the whole of the healthcare market from the first thing that you should look at is, which is the wider market. What are the trends? What are the themes? To the commercialization and how you should value the companies which have actually started making money, which there are plenty. And there are tangible metrics to look at. A lot of people often talk about the fact that it's risky, there aren't enough tangible metrics, but there are actual things that you can look at in the healthcare world. Maybe not the kind of things that you look at for more normal companies, but there's still metrics that you can compare between different companies to see which ones come out on top. And that's what we've done. We've screened for those metrics and we've got five tables which show our five top picks in each of the different mini sectors.
There's only four in animal health. Are there only four companies in animal health?
Yeah.
They're all good ones though, actually.
They are. AIM is very, very good at animal health. The other thing it's very good at is tools and services, of which Abcam is the one that we look at. Abcam is not in the table because it's too expensive. It didn't hit our screen, which was disappointing. But
yeah, I mean, there's a lot of ideas here. And we won't go through the seven-step process, because we'll leave that to readers to go and read at their leisure. The plan here is to take this further. Now, we obviously cover these companies at results time. We've got 250 words. We occasionally tip them. We've got 600 words. But we think really the thing that puts people off in this market is really getting behind the science sometimes. And the management, I think, is really important here. Mm-hmm. So we're going to take this a little bit further, aren't we?
Yeah. So in our new Alpha product, we're going to be writing reports about the healthcare companies, which we think look really, really good. And we're doing that. We're picking the companies based on not just on like what we think sounds nice. We have actually gone through every single AIM listed healthcare company and screened for about 20 different metrics. And
give some examples. What sort of things are we looking for?
We are looking for, so management track record is a really important one. So I have gone through every single chief executive of a healthcare company on AIM. It's taken a while.
I was going to say, our data machines don't do that.
No, I've gone through it. It's been fun. And look to see whether they've had drug trial failures in the past, whether they're invested in the company, because that's a really good sign of a company which, like, if management are actually behind it financially, they're going to care a little
bit
more.
Skin in the game.
Yeah, exactly. There are so many things we've looked at. In what phase of development their drug is at, whether they've got a good commercial side, which means they've got some money coming in, so they're not just reliant on equity and on raising money via placings and things like that. There are loads of ways of assessing healthcare without just looking at, is this drug going to make it or not? And that is another thing that we can look at, and we'll be diving into a bit more detail on the companies that are in good areas of the market as well, whether they're trying to take on GSK. Don't try and take on GSK. Do something like a company called Diurnal is doing, which is in endocrine illnesses. No one else is doing that. That's a great idea. So that is what these reports will be. There'll be much deeper analysis of companies which have come out of the top of our screens, and we're going to make a buy or sell case on them. They're not all going to be buy. Some of them we might say, yeah, it's come out the top of our screen, but oh no, it's still too risky, or it's already got there, not a good moment to invest at the moment, but those will be appearing on Alpha in due course.
Well, it sounds like you put a lot of work into that. I mean, that is that information you can, as I say, you can't download that anywhere. That
no, it's not anywhere. And I think it was a really valuable thing to do for the IC's analysis in general. Like, that is, we're looking at these companies a bit more sensibly, which has been very interesting.
Yeah. Hopefully might add a little bit of confidence to the British biotech industry.
I hope
and
so.
Even up the playing field against NASDAQ.
That's what we want.
Excellent. All right, before we sign off, it's that time of the year, 6 months in, tips of the year update. How are we doing?
I'm doing really well.
You always do really well.
You're
at this.
Doing very well.
I do. I have a track record to maintain. It's not all winning, but
Okay, we'll talk about your own. Go on, talk about
it. Yeah, I'll talk about myself. Yeah, JD Sports was my tip of the year, and it's looking pretty good. Up nearly a third.
Yeah. Those kids just can't stop buying those trainers.
As their chief financial officer, Brian Small, said to me, we know that our kids are image conscious and they'll pay any price to look good in front of their mates.
Or their dads will pay any price for them to look good in front of their mates. Yeah. So, I mean, overall, the portfolio is, what is it? It's down a little bit, but the market's fairly flat. Yeah, it's not the greatest performance, but we've still got 6 months to go. We've had a couple of
weeks along.
We've actually only had one. There's only one there that's really bad, and one just a few.
If you take that out, it's actually not that bad.
Yeah, indeed. Your tip of the year is doing okay.
Yeah, one of them is.
You had two, did you?
I did do two. Yes, the other one is Relex. The first one is Entertainment One, and that's going to do spectacularly once it gets taken over. It is the takeover.
That is the idea.
Yeah, and from a little bit of analysis that I did this week, if you base Entertainment One's current valuation against what other media players are offering for other media players, so AT&T, Time Warner, Disney, Fox are examples, they would be having to offer Entertainment One a 40% premium on their current share price.
So what are we waiting for? I mean, are we just waiting for all this takeover shenanigans going on, Sky, Disney? I lose track of what's going on there. Yes. It's the most complicated takeover
triangle I've ever seen. Luckily, we'll be writing a story explaining it all next week.
Oh, fantastic. I might actually finally understand it. You know, once that's done, and let's hope it's done soon, are people going to start looking at this again? And perhaps ITV is another one we've talked about before.
I think people are looking at it anyway, which is why the share price is up 20% in the last few months.
Yeah.
People are looking at Entertainment One as if it is a takeover target. It is. It's got a fantastic portfolio of original content, and that is what is valuable at the moment. Netflix is spending $8 billion on original content this year. There is so much money to be made from original content, and they're just in a perfect place. I think Netflix is going to buy it.
But, I mean, devil's advocate, it's just Peppa Pig, isn't it?
Peppa Pig is so valuable. It's unbelievable how valuable it is. They made so much money from Peppa Pig sales, as in, like, little toys of Peppa Pig.
I jest. But I guess a company like Bloomsbury has proved that you can make a huge amount of money out of just one thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Really, Harry Potter in that case.
And they are still... That's the biggest growth part of their business, Harry Potter and its new illustrated versions. It's incredible. With
and the 20th anniversary versions as well.
I bet you bought them, Harriet.
Yeah, I've got them all. in Ravenclaw colours as well.
So behind Rafa Nadal is...
I mean, it's just one of my biggest passions in life. But yeah, let's not expose my dorkiness to the whole world.
Hey, listen, we all work at the IC.
I know, it's too late for us.
That's where we're at. All right. Anyway, thank you very much. Thank you, Megan. Thank you, Harriet. There is lots of... It's a really fat magazine this week. What's next to focus on? Virtual reality, which...
really interesting.
Harriet number two, Klarfeld, alluded to last week. Really interesting if early stage market. In fact, loads of it. Robbo's talks about electric vehicles this week. Really fantastic piece of history there about petrol pumps. Who'd have thought petrol pumps could be so interesting?
I bet he knew that as well. I bet he didn't even have to Google it. He just knew the history of petrol pumps.
That's true.
Yeah, he is that kind of guy. Lots in the personal finance and funds section they'll be talking about on their podcast tomorrow. Chris Dillo has updated his benchmark portfolios. Momentum doing very well. Ocado's been mentioned about 10 times in the magazine this week in various places. Yeah. It's a hot stock. It's a hot stock.
It should also be said that they have results on Tuesday, so maybe hang tight and see what those numbers can tell us, if anything at all. I wouldn't hold your breath.
Absolutely. And as we alluded to earlier, Mr. Bear Boys talks about the whole the impact of these big supermarket tie-ups on the FMCG supply chain. Yeah, loads. Simon Thompson, just loads. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. We will be back again next week. Pick up the magazine, All Good News Agents, 7 Steps to Healthy Profits, Taking the Pain Out of Healthcare Investing. Anyway, thank you all for listening. Thank you, Harriet. Thank you, Megan. And we will be back again next week. Goodbye.